when Aaron introduces you, then your mic will be live. Yes. No, I didn't tell you anything. We talked about copies in 5 seconds.
Untwist the lies and deceptions. Seek the truth and begin to see through the veil. Welcome to Twisted Radio with host Aaron Dakins, where you become part of the resistance and begin to fight back with knowledge and truth. Truth is power, and survival is knowledge. And now, host Aaron Dakins.
Well, good evening and welcome to the show tonight, everyone. Welcome to Twisted Radio. I'm your host, Aaron Dakins. Tonight is Thursday, July 26th of 2012. Whenever you're listening or wherever you are, this is going to be an outstanding show tonight. I have one of my favorite people coming on the show tonight. I'm going to give you a little bit of his bio, and I'm sure you've heard this name, and if you haven't, you've been living under a rock. His name is Stan Deo. He has held above top secret security clearance and worked undercover for the FBI. He was also part of Black Projects, basically flying saucer technology. He's a computer programmer. He's a senior systems analyst, research physicist, marine architect, propulsion engineer for marine air and spacecraft, author of 2 books. He also is a partner in Deo Enterprises and his lovely, lovely wife, Holly. They have Dare to Prepare, which is the prepper's handbook. If you do not have Dare to Prepare by Holly Deo, which is a 630-some page book, and this is 8x10. It's not a little book. This book has everything in it that you need to prepare for what is coming and to help get you through the hard times. Dare to Prepare. And on that note, I'm going to welcome Stan Deo to the show. Welcome, Stan.
Thank you for inviting me, Aaron. Good to be here.
I'm just thrilled to death.
I got to know something. Why do you call this Twisted, this show?
Well, because we live in such a twisted world, don't we? And that's why
okay.
I named it that, because it's so twisted up. It's, you know, it's like the Bible tells us, the truth will be lies and lies will be truth.
Right.
Everything is just so twisted anymore, and that's why.
Okay.
I know it's a little weird. I'm weird.
You remember it.
Yeah, you definitely remember it. And, it's hard to forget. But then again, that's just our world, Stan. It's all twisted, and I hope everything is working out at your house today. I know you've had kind of a rough day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine.
Good deal. Well, you were a guest on the Power Hour with Joyce Riley yesterday. And let me tell you, I've listened to the broadcast twice, Stan. Don't ever say that. It was outstanding what you were talking about. Brad, my husband, has listened to it. Now, this is probably your fault, Stan. Now he wants to go dig a hole in the backyard and put a room in, okay?
I think he's right.
I think so, too. And I that's why I wanted you on my show tonight, kind of short notice. I do apologize. But
that's all right.
What you were saying yesterday was so important, especially to the preppers and everybody that's wanting to get ready and doing their best to get their preps in order and then have really dedicated themselves to doing what the Father's asking them to do in preparation, you know, getting their quote-unquote ark ready.
Yep.
We got to get prepared for this. And what I'd like you to do, Stan, if you could, and I'm just going to turn it over to you, explain the solar maximum, you know, the CMEs, how it's kind of changing the magnetosphere and the ionosphere, and it kind of has a lot to do with our drought and our strange weather and what we need to do to prepare for this, for what's coming with this solar maximum, if you would.
Well, I'll start rambling about that, but when you see that I hit upon a subject I need to talk more about, well, please feel free to interject.
Will do.
All right. The situation at the moment is rather dire, serious here for the planet for so many reasons I can't begin to count them. But the major thing at the moment that I see that is being felt by many people on the planet is the droughts and the floods and the extreme storms, the hurricanes over land called I call them the landed canes, but they call them derechos. But these things are impacting a lot of people, farmers, and eventually the people that depend on the farmers. Now, what is causing this is not global warming from cow gas or car gas. You know, that contributes a minute percent of what is really causing the changes.
And now, Stan, let me ask you this. Let me kind of interject here, because I have a lot of people that listen to this that also believe in Planet X, Nibiru, that type of thing, and they're kind of saying that that Nibiru getting closer to our solar system is causing the sun to kind of act wacky too right now. Is it with this? Do you think at all?
Well, look, I know that people like Edgar Cayce and other more modern prophets have predicted or prophesied that there would be some sort of a disturbance of the sun and hence the people on Earth in our environment around this time. Now, as far as me actually seeing a photo or hard data on where this Planet X is or will be, I don't have anything that I can trust other than this. I ran my own celestial equations, which allow you to plot the orbits and the speeds of the various planets using a series of equations. And I put them into the computer, and I also found out while I was doing this, I found the formula that fits our star system. It tells where the planets have to orbit. And some of the orbits around our star are empty. That's all right. But one of the empty orbits I found, way out there, about 75 times the distance of Earth from the sun, mm-hmm. has an orbital period of 3,600 years, plus or minus
100
years. Now, I started looking at that real close when, you know, these seers and prophets started saying, well, it's Nibiru, it's got a 3,600-year period. So I dug into stuff over at NASA and NOAA and various astronomical research facilities, and I found... And I found this in my equations, too, that the planet Neptune and Uranus and even the little moonlet, star planetlet type thing, Pluto, their orbits have all been compressed by some unknown large object out there that's not visible to us. And its orbit is not just a round orbit. It's not even kind of just a fat egg-shaped ellipse orbit. It is something that's really... kind of narrow and raised up above the plane, the equatorial plane of our star system, of the sun. Now, I calculated, okay, if they are right, and this star, whatever it is, or planet, or this object, if it is coming into our solar system, where would it enter? How long would it stay in the inner solar system? And then what would be the time that it leaves? And mm-hmm. the possible effects. Now, I found in my equations that once it got close to Mars, up above it and diving at a very steep angle around the sun, that from the time it got to that orbit, it would probably only be here 11 years maximum in the inner system. And that's maximum. There are a couple other factors we had to put in there. So I'd say that if it's there, it's very close to the sun now. I haven't seen that yet. But
okay.
there are things happening which, like NOAA and NASA have said, look, we're calling this sunspot cycle, number 24 of the sun, which is usually about 11.8 years, this sunspot cycle is different than all the rest that we've ever studied. And it is called a grand solar maximum. Never had one before that we know about. And in this, you don't have as many sunspots, but there's something else happening. It's blowing off chunks of the sun into the system, and some of it's been aimed at us in the last couple of months and hit the planet. These are small things compared to what I think is going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years, in fact, even the next few months, maybe. Now, is it being caused by Nibiru or, you know, a dwarf star or something like that? I can only surmise maybe, because I can't prove it to my satisfaction yet. I don't know why such information would be circulating from the various sources they're putting out that I've seen, or what purpose it would serve if it were a lie. But anyway, I've seen comets come close to the sun in years past, and from the satellite photos, when the comets get close to the sun and some of them would actually impact the sun, there would be a large solar flare, like an explosion that would shoot out tons and millions of tons of stuff of the sun out toward where the comet hit it, where it was coming from. So if there is something moving in close to the sun, it's got to be pretty tough to withstand the heat, and it's also likely to cause disruptions all over the surface of the sun.
Okay. Hey, Stan, can you turn your volume up on your phone a little bit by any chance?
No, I asked about that. This is the best phone I've got. Let me just
try okay.
something
okay.
else here. I'll just, I'm going to switch to a different phone here while I've got you. If I disappear, you can ring me back, all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Right. Okay, how's that? Is that better?
Yeah, that is a little better.
A little but not a lot, hey?
Oh, no, there you go. Hey, that's wonderful.
Okay, good. Well, we'll take that line then.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, so Nibiru is still a question mark, but there is something. Something is perturbing planets in our outer system, and we're looking for it in the inner system now for effects of it. But
because you think there's something to it. I've wondered if I was crazy.
Well, we're still discovering a lot of stuff about our solar system. And, for instance, most people think it ends out there where Pluto is, but the extent of the bubble of moving things around our star, the sun, if you were to start at one edge of that bubble, go through the sun and out the other side, at the speed of light, it would take you about a year or more. It's big. And there's a lot of stuff happening out there. So stuff that we don't have a lot of data, at least publicly, on. I suspect that corporate or government-held data might say otherwise. So now, as far as the gravity of something like a dwarf star or a planet, large planet, affecting Earth from that distance, I think that what it would do more than affect the Earth itself directly, that it would affect the sun and the orbits of several planets and cause the orbits, which control your motion around the sun, those orbits to wobble. And that itself could cause the Earth to reel like a drunken man, to crack, have earthquakes, as well as the other planets. And there are things happening right now, like on the south pole of Titan, one of the moons out there, of Saturn, I think it is, but that we've got photographs that have come in of a strange vortex appearing over the south pole there, which they don't have an explanation for, but of course my theory does. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is it's a get-prepared moment in case something like this really is real, because there's enough things happening now in the sun and on the Earth in the climate change that you know something is wrong. So it's time to start making preparations and, try to make it through the other side. And if nothing happens, well, you've got an extra bit of stuff and a hole in the ground or whatever.
Now, if there was something that's doing that, or even if there wasn't, we're just headed into the solar maximum just by itself, which is bad enough, is there something that's causing, like, the Earth's core to maybe go around faster or behave differently, which would lead to more earthquakes, which, the Bible tells us we're going to have to deal with this?
Well, now I'll say this here, too, while we're on the air and when you replay this. If people will go to our website at standeo.com, standeyo.com, and as you get there, the front page, just almost above the standeo.com name that you'll see, and to the right of it, it says, I think it's Stan's Corner. Let me just check, make sure that's where it is. Yeah.
Go it to is Stan's Corner. Corner.
Yeah, and then Stan's Show Images. And there's a couple places that people need to go to see what I'm going to talk about as far as the planet expanding and why. And if you click on that first little block I've got, or the first row, hollow planet stars and galaxies, it's a preview of, it shows you photographs and things about what I'm talking about, like the planets, all of them expand as they get older. And an animation by Neil Adams, plus a link to his website to show you these things from real data. That kind of stuff I'm solid on. Now, the Earth has expanded before. It is no secret at this point that the continents of the planet used to be touching and were together. What is argued by some who really haven't studied the data is that, there was one landmass floating in a big ocean, that was it. Not so. The Earth was at least 25%, maybe a third, smaller in diameter than it is now, and the continents all touched together, and there was a much smaller water mass than there is now. The planet then, either suddenly or over a period of time, as the Egyptian records show from one pharaoh, began to expand and expand and make earthquakes and all kinds of disasters. The Earth was not the only one doing this. As it ages, its arm or its diameter starts to get bigger and bigger until at some point the surface of the Earth will crumble and become like the rings of Saturn around the new surface, which will be made from layers inside the core. As stars age, they do the same thing. Some of them become huge red giants as they explode their diameters. So it is a thing we see in the universe, that as spinning planets, stars, moons get older, they expand. And that's another whole whole discussion, but you can see that there on that link on the Hollow Planets thing. And there will be more as I finish the paper I've been working on. Now, so the Earth poles are, I think, going to open a bit. I don't know whether it'll be a clear hole down into the planet like the Hollow Earth people say, but they are thinning at the poles. These two poles on our planet are thinning as far as thickness.
I've done a lot of research on the Hollow Earth thing too, Stan. There's got to be something to it, I think. There's just something that's always intrigued me with that whole theory myself.
Well, Aaron,
then I go.
I agree with you, and you know, Admiral Byrd's record or his diary of that may be questionable or whatever. You know, they may challenge the authenticity of it, but under the scientific approach I'm taking now, it predicts that there will be voids or hollow shells inside planets, and the Earth is no different. And that there would be a hot core, much smaller. And without boring with the technical details, I know that what I'm saying is right. The core of the planet is a different kind of metal, you know, like more cadmium and stuff than just pure iron. And there may be more than one void space. And isn't it interesting? The Bible says that the home, or you know, the deep where they keep the imprisoned demons and spirits, is below the surface of the earth. And they say it's in a bottomless pit.
Where's the abyss.
Well, yeah, where's the bottom of a ball inside, you know? I mean, you can't, there's no bottom to it.
Yeah, that's true.
So they explain it absolutely correctly. And, you know, boy, there's just so many things we've got to learn in so short a time. But these things tell me that something is in a state of change on the planet, and we may wobble even more than normal. I don't know that we'll flip upside down. I know Venus is upside down, but the other planets all seem to keep in this north-south relationship to the equatorial plane of the sun, but increased wobble, changes in the magnetic field, inversing the magnetic field, these things happen with the sun itself. It reverses its magnetic poles.
Okay.
And so, you know, the Hale magnetic cycle is what they talk about there, and after the astronomer Hale. And if it does it, that doesn't mean that ours has to, but it certainly can. It wouldn't violate any, you know, observation we made of the sun.
Huh. So, I mean, wait, back up a little bit, though. You said that Venus had flipped poles. So that's,
well, Venus is upside down. It spins the wrong way upside down. It's the only.
So this is something that routinely happens, right?
What, the flipping?
Yes.
I don't know whether it routinely happens or not, but if you study Velikovsky's work and the ancient records he studied, he thinks Venus is an interloper, either a large comet that converted into planetary mass or a planet, a moon of some outer planet that jumped down into this orbit. If you think about it, just because the sun is spinning doesn't mean that a planet has to orbit at a certain distance, but yet it does. And there's a whole reason for that, an invisible swirling fluid in the universe. And I call it the containment fields. It's a weak gravitational force that organizes atoms into a very tight ball, which can become a star, a planet, a moon, a galaxy even. So that force is what planets have to lodge in for stable orbits around whatever they're orbiting, the center of a galaxy, a star system, a planet. Now, Venus, I think, will slow down and eventually possibly flip upside down and start to spin the right way. It's a recent, in astronomical terms, I think it's a recent occupier of the orbit that it's in.
Okay.
So I don't think the other planets necessarily have to flip upside down because they didn't come in traumatically like this no time recently anyway.
Now, what would happen if we flip our poles? There has been so much talk about that, Stan.
Well, the magnetic poles, I do see this happening. Now, there's very strong evidence, and this is hard data from, you know, main science, that the magnetic field of the Earth has been declining for some time now, weakening. Now, it can go suddenly. It can get to a point, you know, in our lifetime, perhaps, in fact, in the next few years, if some external force like the sun starts to work on our magnetic field. When the sun's field flips, our magnetic field could flip so that the North Pole becomes the South Pole of the magnetic field, not the planet.
Okay.
Now, if that happens, what's going to happen is as the magnetic field of the Earth declines down to zero, and then turns around and goes back up the way, gaining strength with the reverse poles. While it's near and at zero strength, our ionosphere will disappear because there's no magnetic field to hold the charged particles in that shield us. And so
that's
like
not
Star
good.
Trek. No, it's like Star Trek. Shields are down. What do we do?
Yeah.
Run. I mean,
run. We're vulnerable. Run.
That's it. And these shields in the ionosphere shield us from not only the solar radiation, but from galactic and intergalactic radiation that reaches a certain gamma rays and other frequencies. So when that shield goes down, there are ultraviolet frequencies and other frequencies that are quite harmful to human life, including the gamma rays, that will sterilize parts of the planet while that's down. It will hit trees, grass, fish, livestock, people. We have seen in the last 5 years an evidence of what happens to people underneath the weakening of the ionosphere. There is an area in the South Atlantic called the South Atlantic Anomaly in the ionosphere, and it's a weak patch, a thin patch in the ionosphere. Astronauts don't fly through that. Space station doesn't like to fly through that. It is very risky. Extremely high radiation penetrates that.
Okay.
So the hole there has a soft edge to it, so it expands periodically and contracts. And about 5 years ago, it expanded, and the edge of it was hitting over northeast South America in the islands there. And people were ringing us on the phone from that island because they'd heard our shows before and saying, look, there's something wrong here. The sun is so hot, so bright, it's like pins and needles on our skin, and our children are getting nauseous at school and disoriented. Adults are feeling the same thing, that are out in the sun without enough clothing on. What's going on? And I suspect that they were getting just a taste of the edge of what happens when our ionosphere disappears. Now,
is this what the Bible talks about, where it says the third of the earth will be burned up?
I have to wonder. Now, it says that the light of the moon will be seven times as bright as the sun at night, so that the moon will be as bright as the sun for you. But by the same token, it says, and the moon will be as the light, or sorry, the sun will be as the light of 7 days. Now, I don't know how that could be in all the frequency ranges, but if it is, it's going to burn a lot of the planet. I think that I need to retranslate that Hebrew from the way they translate it historically, because I don't think that we could survive on the planet. Anything could survive at seven times the heat of the sun. It might
Does that mean, too, that the sun or the moon is also going to be reflecting in a lot of the, I don't know, the heat? I don't know. It talks about
it'll be reflecting a lot of things. It will absorb a lot of the infrared, but
okay,
the visible light might be brighter.
Okay.
You can have brighter visible light without infrared, which would mean that it wouldn't be, like cooking us with seven times the temperature. I mean, that's just ridiculous for anybody to think they could survive that even in a cave. However, it will get hot. Now, also in the biblical prophecies, they say something else about the sun and the moon. At a certain point, if you looked at the sun, it would look like you were looking through a sackcloth of hair, so that only pinholes of light appear on the surface of the sun. At the same time, in the same verse, however, the moon, it turns the color of blood, dark red, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's because it's not getting full radiation in the visible wavelengths from the sun.
Okay.
So you got brightness and you got darkness. Now, somewhere in there, all these things point to the sun as a judgment from the good Lord, because that's not man-made. There's no way you can blame that on, global warming.
No, I don't think cow farts probably did that, Stan.
I don't, even if you lit them all.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't think so. So, I guess suffice it to say that we're headed into some very kind of unusual times. And we really don't know what's going to happen. We base a lot, I know you and Holly do too, on what the Bible tells us is going to happen. But when we're talking like whether or not there is a new birth, we're still headed into that solar maximum.
Yes.
And we've not done that in our lifetime, correct?
That's correct. In fact, in recorded history, human history, we have not seen that.
It is
new. That's right.
Brand new. Wow, yep. I didn't know that.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, another thing here. Now, let me tell you some hearsay, okay? And I'm mm-hmm. prefacing this so that you don't just run off and cut your wrist. But I have some. Well,
I don't plan on that, Stan. That's okay.
you listen to the show with Joyce, and mm-hmm. I have, and Holly has, we have several sources of information fed to us, some by internet, some by phone, some by letter, whatever, and by word of mouth. And the consensus we're getting at the moment is that our government is preparing to try to endure a major catastrophic event from the sun between right now and sometime in October. There have been reports, in fact, I got this from a source that is way up in the government. And let me just put that on hold just a second there. All right. Okay. Give me a second.
It
okay,
sounds like our
go.
House.
Now, the source, I asked the source, I said, look, face to face, and could look in the eyes and see whether the individual is just, you know, shoot me, Barney, because I know the individual from other activities, and the individual is very straight shooting. So I said, look, what is going to happen? When is it going to happen? What kind of a solar event are you talking about that's going to hit our planet? And the individual said, Stanley, I have told you this and only this. We are expecting a major solar event from the sun that will cause disruption in the population here. And that's all you get. So I guess they had to protect their source or their backside in the government as well. But
right.
Now I ask myself, why would the government give me disinformation like this through a leak? Is it to be a soft warning to people who will listen so that some will have a chance of surviving? Or is it something to disrupt and cause panic and fear in the people with, you know, when nothing happens? You know, so that's why I preface these things saying they're hearsay. But we've also been getting very strong information back from people that aren't high in the government whose friends and family have been taken into classified briefings by the government because a member of their family or their household is serving in the government in a position that's either in Border Patrol or personnel control, you know, riot control, stuff like that. And the person of the family that's been, you know, in those positions has now been given a GPS beeper locator so that they and their family, with 24 hours notice, can be evacuated to a place of safety by the government, so they can just track them with their beeper signal and their GPS ID. Now,
that
worries me a bit. I gotta tell you. I mean, a lot of these people talking to us are like, you know, trusted members of the community, like firefighters and Border Patrol. You know, that you kind of hold respect for.
Right.
Something's going on, and I can understand if I were in the government how I would want to hold order as long as possible to make as many
right.
preparations as I could. Otherwise, there would be panic. And if I were the government and I really wanted to save as many people as I could without having them kill each other in the riots that might ensue, I would leak information this way well in advance so it gets out in the grapevine. And the fastest way to spread it is to say, oh, excuse me, this is a secret, don't tell anybody, but...
right, exactly.
And I think I would do it that way just to try to hold civil order long enough to, you know, get prepared to save as many as you can another way.
Well, and I think the father allows some of this stuff to be leaked, too, so that we, those that are, you know, that are listening, will heed that warning and continue to get ready. Because, you know what, Stan, whether or not we all survive or not, you know, I don't know, but there's probably... A lot of people will die when these things happen. I understand that, you know. I'm not an infant. You got to be on to hold my hand. But there's still going to be remnant. And, I mean, the Father's
yep.
already told us that.
Yep.
So, I know we're on the same page with preparing. And that's one thing, too, that, you know, with this solar maximum that we're hitting, and if this is what your leaks are telling you, man, we got to go over and get a crash course in what we can do individually on shoestring budgets to give us a little bit a better bet that we're going to survive this.
Aaron, there are several things to consider. I think one thing we can count on is widespread breakout of fire. And the reason for that is if we have a super coronal mass ejection, it's shooting even heavy iron atoms at us, these will cause massive shortages in our power distribution grids, not only
mm-hmm.
in the States, but all over the world. When you have had excessive drought, the landscape underneath those wires is tinderbox.
Uh-huh.
And we have seen in the past when minor coronal mass ejections have hit in Washington State and up in Canada that they have started fires because of the shorts they caused to ground on these power wires. And I think this may start fires all over the place. So people need to look at their own dwelling if they're going to try to weather this in their dwelling. Hopefully they have a storm cellar or basement or something so that they can get away from what might happen just above them on the surface with high winds and impacts from debris and stuff like that. But clear your property around your home of burnable stuff, whether it be trash or whether it be trees, even prairie grass. You've got to clear that. That's cheaper to do than buying firefighting equipment that may or may not work in the heat that's coming.
Right.
You want to have some food and water put away. Now, get this. When Holly and I were invited down to visit with the Hopi elders a couple of years back, back in 96 and 97 or 8, they told us at that time, took us in confidence because of things that we shared with them that they were expecting us to bring. And they said, look, we are building underground kivas, or like an underground igloo, it looks like, out of mud. And we're putting beans and rice and pots and water in there, enough to stay for a few weeks. Because, Masau, God, the Great White Father, call him what you want, has told our people for a long time to pass this down, that this time would come when the sun will be so hot that we cannot bear it on the surface. So we're going to weather it in our kivas.
Okay.
Now, I said, the obvious question, when is this going to happen? Soon. He would cross his hands, his arms and look at me and say, soon. So we have a joke around the house. Hopey soon.
Oh, Lord, oh, we'll probably start saying that too.
I laugh, but you have to when it's so serious. I can't tell you how depressing it gets around our office when we get data like this. And you don't know what to do with it sometimes, You just want to run out there in the backyard and look at the stars or look at the clouds and say, nice day, isn't it, out there?
Yeah. You do.
I'm sure
you want to be an ostrich. Yeah. I just have to shut down. I just have to come Saturdays. Just have to say, you know what? I'm not turning the computer on today. This is a down day.
That's our Sabbath. Yeah, we do that, too.
We do, too. And, I don't even – I just want to spend Saturdays with my family, my critters. And doing whatever, and making memories. I keep telling people that listen to my show, guys, what's relatively normal right now, make your memories now. Make some memories this summer while you're prepping, because they may have to hold you for a long, long time. Now, I mean, you obviously recommend building some kind of underground room.
Well, I think so. I mean, if people can't afford it, then maybe they have a neighbor or friend that's on board that they could share theirs with them. I don't think it's going to be for a couple of weeks during the maximum, if that long. But you'd probably also want to do this. Because of the widespread fires, there's going to be a lot of smoke and ash in the air. And you'll have trouble breathing. Some people will anyway. But you need to get those little face mask filters that you can wet down or a wet towel that you can use to try
we
to
have
filter
those.
That junk out.
Yeah. We have a bunch of those, yeah. We have...
Cheap and,
there's a question from the chat. What's the question? Like a basement would suffice, Stan?
Well, we're kind of dug into our basement, hoping it will. I mean, it's the good Lord's will. We'll either be here or we won't, raptured out or wiped out, one of the two.
That's
we're
it. See, we're on the slab.
Pardon?
If we did, our house is a big house, but it's on a slab. Our house used to be a barn that they converted into a house. So, we would have to literally rent a backhoe and just dig a room and just shore it up with plywood for a while.
You would do is you'd want to dig down with your backhoe or whatever. You're going to need to dig down so that you can put 6 feet of dirt on top of you, ideally, put some slats or wood across the top of the hole you make. And then some plastic liner and then put about 6 feet of dirt. And you'll find that'll help your temperature a lot, except for your body heat, which each of you will generate about 100 watts, continuous, like a 100-watt bulb. So you probably have to have some way for that to vent out, but a pipe or like a tractor's exhaust pipe, with a flap on it, so you can blow it out. But keep
you would have to. We have one of those in our root cellar. We just have a root cellar. It's got like a bunch of dirt mounted up around it. It's got the positive and negative airflow and all that. It's just not big enough to stay in. We could not fit very many people in our little root cellar.
How many people do you have to put in your cellar?
Sure. No, I'm not. No, there'll be more than that. We're looking at 15 or 20 that might be here, Stan, at our place.
I might suggest that you dig several. If you're going to have that many, dig several holes rather than one big one.
It's
easier to shore up the smaller ones than it is the bigger ones.
Exactly.
And if one goes down, then you have the others that might still be functional.
That's right.
I mean,
and
there might be asteroids or junk. I don't know.
Oh, that'll be our luck, Sam. Stan, it will be our luck that we'll have asteroids too. But it's all prophesied in the Bible. That's what
I know.
We
got
to get away from the fear, and just get ready.
Well, we're not supposed to be given over to the spirit of fear. The Christian community
no.
should believe that. And I know, absent from the body, you're there with the Lord. I've almost been there myself, nearly dead, and gone out of my body and seen out there. So I know that where I'm going after I leave this body is a wonderbar place.
Amen. It's better than here.
Oh, and it is nice. The peace you feel, the relief in your mind, all these things, the stress that has worn the saints down in this time, all gone. So if it does come, you need in your prayers to say, good Lord, if I'm to survive this and be here and work here on the earth in this body longer, okay, I'll leave it to you. But if I'm to leave, you know, in some disaster, I ask you to take care of me and have your dying mercy and grace that I go peacefully and joyfully into your hands and just leave it at that. Do the best you can until you can't.
Amen to that. And I always look at it like, you know, when it's your time to go, it's your time to go, because the Father says so. And when it's your time, you're just going, I'm going home. I'm just going where I'm supposed to be. So I don't walk into the prepper fold with fear, and I don't want my listeners to feel that, because we're all a family. We're all His remnant. We're His children. We just got to all work together and get our individual arcs ready. And
let
like
me tell you something.
Yeah?
Let me just interrupt here. Today, part of the sadness we had was we had to part with our dog that's been with us for 15 and a half years. He was so old and sick and in pain, he just couldn't move anymore. So today we finally decided, I was going to tell you about this. We took him to the vet, to a woman vet that we've always had him treated by. She's very kind. And we laid him on the table, and we all stood around, and we petted him, and he was at peace. And then we, you know, put him to sleep. And the good Lord can do us the same way, you know, give us the pet, the comfort, and then we pass into His hands. And that's just the way I felt today when I watched him go.
And you're very right. It is. It can be very peaceful. Oh, I got a feedback on that one. We lost our shepherds last year.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I've lost a lot. I was a registered veterinary nurse for how long? 25 years before I retired to do this. Yeah. So I mean, we have a lot of critters. I love my babies. Okay. And it's hard to lose them, but you know when it's time. And there is a piece about it. I was really sad when we lost Ruger. But he was at peace now, you know, you know, and I know we're going to be the same way too, Stan. We just got to deal with what we got coming at us right now.
Well, we're trying, I know there's no way to prepare absolutely for this except in the hands of the Lord, but we know we're probably going to see people die if we survive, you know, some of what's coming. We'll see people die for any kind of reasons around us, but it's still going to be hard to deal with no matter how academic, if you try to treat the subject, it's still going to touch your heart. You know?
It's going to be very hard to deal with losing people that you love.
Yes.
In this, and I've tried to tell my listeners again that we have to prepare for the emotional part of this, not just the craziness and the chaos, but the emotional part of losing people that you love. And we have to try to come to terms with it and deal with it and know that you really can't change it. You just can't. Now, boy, we digressed. I could talk to you all night.
Don't we?
Yeah. But let's get back to preparing. Now, what would you say, you know, explain to people that as we enter this solar maximum, we're going to see increasing amounts of solar flares, coronal mass ejections. We already know our infrastructure on the electricity and telecommunications, and we've got satellites out there that they're probably just going to be fried. I mean, I look back to the Carrington event, you know, in the 1800s.
Yes.
And that's what we're looking at, true?
Oh, that or better, yes.
Okay.
We're much more exposed with all the power grids and the satellite links and stuff we depend on daily. I mean, GPS probably isn't going to work anymore. The satellites will go down.
And it's just going to be chaos. The lights are really going to go out sometime. And I don't know, I'm sure you and Holly have noticed, too, that with all these storms that come through, it's like not only are the storms more intense, but, man, our power grid is so much weaker. It just takes, you know, basically a fart sideways to get these electric poles to fall down anymore.
I know. You know, I think back to people like Edgar Casey and some of the others that have seen what America is going to be in the time of changes. And I've made maps, which are on that images page I told you about. You can see the Hopi water level thing. And I looked at just one area. Well, I looked at the whole United States, actually. I put a blue map up there showing where the water intrusions have been forecast to strike, either by Hopi Prophecy or Edgar Cayce or people like him.
Mm-hmm.
And these are very easily obtainable flood zones by a couple of things. If the Earth's rotation is impacted in any way by the solar wind, by another object coming close to it, which the Bible does say will actually hit us in the oceans, there's about a 500-foot high spare tire, if you wish, of water around the equator of the Earth. And it's held there by the spin of the Earth. And so if you impact that in an ocean or in the land with something hitting and slowing up the Earth even momentarily, what will happen mm-hmm. is there will be a massive series of tidal waves, like running around the planet, in two directions probably. Now, I looked at the Hopi prophecy that said, that they told me, look, we are going to go by canoe between our mesas, our three mesas here in Arizona, before this is through and before we move up into the Colorado region. And so I did a plot, you know, on the computer and tried to see how the water could stack up that high. And there's two ways. Southern California could drop a mile, and that's
okay.
pretty heavy.
Wow.
And or there could be an earthquake in the Grand Canyon up just kind of southwest of the Hopi Mesas, could block the flow of water, and normal flow down the Colorado River might fill that up in 25 years. But with surging rains and surging, you know, tidal waves, it might flow into there from other sources and fill that area quicker. So
okay.
then I said, well, okay, if it does and it goes as far back up into Colorado as the ground level is today, how would the Hopi get there? And so I've actually mapped out the path they would have to take by land to get their people up into Colorado in the Four Corners region where they're headed.
Okay.
So there are things that we're looking at here, trying to look at very scientifically and try to anticipate as many variables as we can to see how these prophecies could be correct. You know, and the Hopi said this, that the flooding that they would see, I think they said that it would happen after massive social disruption in the United States, like multifaceted civil war, brother against brother, and that kind of stuff, and then
right.
foreign invasion by two or three powers, and that the survivors of that, many of them would come to join with the Hopi. The Navajo dwellings will all be underwater at that time, so I don't know how many of the Navajo will survive that, but the Hopi will take the survivors of what's left of the, you know, the remnant of the United States. They come to them, and they will form a new nation of man, and will, you know, go up into the Four Corners, and that's where they will settle. Where they go, whether it'll be up as far as Pueblo, where we are, where they used to come for their ceremonies, I don't know.
Okay.
But they're expecting this, and soon.
It seems like everybody's been expecting this. You just can't get mainstream people to think that it might happen. That's the problem.
I know, and you know, again, I wonder about the wisdom if we were to come out on mainstream news and say, oh, excuse me, what time is it? Look, the world's going to really probably end for many of you in the next day or two, but don't panic.
Right. Don't panic. Don't do anything different, right? Just keep watching TV. It's all good.
Yeah, when you get into that situation and responsible for a large number of people, you have to start thinking about quality of life and how many of them survive, and that, you know, big questions like how do you feed them and this kind of thing. And you have to make hard decisions, much harder than you and I would have to make it at our level.
Right, exactly. Well, I think, you know, we see evidence all around us that these things are beginning to happen. And I think you said on the Power Hour yesterday, too, about the, and you talked a little bit tonight about the ionosphere weakening in parts. And, you know, the coronal mass ejections, they can cause those to weaken further, too, right?
I think it could accelerate it, yes, because
okay.
back in the late 90s and the early, probably up to 2004 or 5, I tracked every day the impact of the coronal mass ejections on the sea surface temperature and on the electromagnetic field of the Earth. And I did find, I was able to correlate very strongly that when we get hit by a strong coronal mass ejection from the sun, that
mm-hmm.
over the next 24 hours, a bubble of heat, if you wish, bounces around inside the planet against the surface of the planet, the mantle inside. And I saw this with, like, big circular things about 600 miles to 1,000 miles in diameter, which would be a 24-hour anomalous heat up of an area, say like northwest Pacific near the Russian islands at the end of the Aleutians. And it would disappear in 24 hours, and it bounced away, and part of it would appear over in the South Atlantic the next day, and then it would be gone. So it transfers heat energy into our system through the electromagnetic field, which goes down inside the Earth and comes back. So,
would that explain why that heat of the oceans? I understand the oceans are supposed to get warmer too.
Yeah, well, that could be due to just direct broadcast of frequencies. In 1992, the Solar Physics Observatory in Arizona, they found that the sun was putting out two new frequencies of ultraviolet, the wide bandwidth, and that they didn't think it would affect human or, you know, animal life per se. What was happening was in the major oceans, especially near the poles, that the plankton and smaller microorganisms were absorbing those wavelengths and growing faster and bigger and heating up the oceans just by the fact they trapped that energy in their bodies and in the food they were ingesting from the water. So that's just two that they'll admit to. And I talked to the Air Force officer, one major that was involved in it, and at the time it happened, and she confirmed it. They had a conference where they were told about this, and at the time they said, something's wrong with the sun in 1992. So it's not gotten better since then.
No, I don't think it's gotten any better. That's for darn sure. I think it's getting worse. I mean, you know, if anybody wants to see what's going on around the world, like with earthquakes and everything else, everybody knows to check standeo.com. Trust me. I go in there every day, multiple times a day, to check the stuff, because you and Holly do a tremendous job keeping track of this.
Well, you know, she just does the majority of that web work, gets up at about 4:30 six days a week in the morning, and updates that with scanning the news all over the planet and putting up in a kind of filtered form to say, look, this is what's important to observe or read about. And, you know, occasionally I'll come along with some scientific thing for her to put up, but believe me, the majority of the work she does.
Oh, bless her heart. We thank her for that too, Stan. We really do. I don't know what I'd do without that site. Although I wish Holly would take more vacations once in a while. I think you guys need it.
Well, maybe we will. We take little micro vacations for about 6 or 7 hours and go up to the mountains.
There you go. We take a break too once in a while, go out the boat. You know, you got to get away. But I think right now, I know there was a listener that called into the show yesterday that talked about that, like not mylar, but that type of material to put in the attics of houses. And you said you didn't think that would prepare much?
No. I know what you're talking about. It's a radiant barrier is what they call it.
Yes, yes.
And it's a foil backed with an insulating material. And under normal solar circumstances, you know, normal weather and climate like we've been used to for centuries, this would be a great insulator and would take care of cooling your house down a fair amount.
Mm-hmm.
But with infrared or heat radiation, the best defense is to have none of it get through the wood or the shingles or anything, to have a silver or like a polished surface, a mirror surface on top of your house. They do make tarps that you can put on, stuff like that. But when the winds start to blow and everything happens, you virtually would lose stuff that's not really tied down.
And fires, I can see where that would be a problem.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've prepared for that here to a certain extent. We've got our own fire pump, fire hoses, and you know, firefighting tanks of water and big tanks. But when it gets that hot, you're going to have to handle, you know, a hot generator, and your water is going to probably be ready to boil anyway, and you won't be out in the heat that long. So,
that's right.
As I said before, the smart thing to do is to remove the stuff around your dwelling or where you're going to be hiding or, you know, weathering this. Remove the flammable material way ahead of time and just have clear rock or dirt around that area. And even then, you know, if you've got trees that burn within, say, 20 or 30 feet, just the radiant heat, not the flames, but the radiant heat can go through your windows. So
right. We've
suggested that people, there's a place over in California that makes a foam, a firefighting foam, and you might know about this. There's a lady over there that used to live in the Springs that told the company, look, make these in a cartridge that you can put on a garden hose so that you can coat your windows in your house with it. And it's 5 times more efficient than water for protecting your home from fire and from radiant heat breaking your windows, which it does. Now, I just can't remember what the link for it is, but I'll try to look for it here before we get off the air, or if not, I'll tell you about it later.
Would there be any way you could make, like, an interior room in your house so that you could maybe ride out the effects of the heat and everything better?
I know that there are going to be things like strong winds, you know, like microbursts and things like that that we're going to have to deal with. And this is why I say probably if you could go below ground, it would be better.
Best way to go. Okay.
All right. Now, I found that the link I was wanting to tell you about. It's called the Foam Fast, FOAM-FAST, Solid Cartridge Class A Foam Technology, and made for homeowners now, in addition to professional firefighters. And if you go to their website, there might be a better website than this, but this is where we found it, was at store.primopumps.com.
Okay. And, I just found the Foam Fast one I'm going to put up in the chat room.
Okay, good.
So people can understand.
Now,
it is now
there. Yes.
Yeah, I've got it.
Okay. Now, that will wash off. You can take water eventually and spray and clean everything. It's kind of white looking foam. But let's hope that that's a problem for you and you survive all this and you want to make your house look nice again. But it is really about the most effective anti-fire thing that a homeowner can do.
Okay.
Other than having the firefighting equipment. And this time, I still suggest that you go ahead and protect it, but you need to get under rock or ground.
Right.
And, you know, about 6 foot of dirt would help. And dig multiple holes around the place rather than trying to make one great big, you know, poorly supported roof.
Room, right. That's a good idea. Now, we're going to kind of do an about face here real quick because we're going to run out of time, Stan. But
okay. All right.
This drought, I know this drought is affecting a large portion of the United States.
Right.
And do you see an end to this drought, or are we just going to continue with this, pretty much? I mean, I know it calls for it in the Bible, so, you know, and pestilence and, you know, all the other good things, too.
Well, I think the drought will prevail for some time, months, years, maybe a couple of years. But the other thing you've got to remember is that when the planet is heated up by the sun or cooled down by not enough sun, it changes the climate, and when it does, certain, you know, movers and shakers like the Arctic winds, the jet stream, this kind of stuff, they either break up or they become very strong, and then something else replaces them, like microbursts from the upper atmosphere. So this can change drought patterns and flood patterns during this climate change. We know that the empty quarter of southern Arabia used to have flourishing forests with 3 and 4 foot and bigger diameter trees because the fossils are there, but now it's covered in sand. So things do change, and it might be from the axis shift at 23.5 degrees, but this is, all I can say is there will be drought and there will be flood. There will be huge lightning storms and hail and stuff, but will it be constantly over one area? I don't think so. I think it will move. It will migrate as the drivers move.
Well, you know what keeps going through my mind lately is the Dust Bowl. You know, they had this really, really bad economy going on like we do now. Then they headed into the drought and they had the Dust Bowl. It's almost like we're repeating history again here.
Like the Grapes of Wrath in Steinbeck's book.
Exactly. I made our kids sit down and watch that black and white movie, but that went over well. But anyway, you know.
Yeah, but it did. The book was even worse.
Yeah. It's just so much. You know, and they were nice people back then for the most part. But, you know, their homes and farms were being foreclosed on right and left, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems like it's all just happening again. We're doomed to repeat history, it seems like. And I think we are. And, you know, I was walking down the driveway the other day, and it was so dry. And we just have gravel on our farm lane. And, it was just blowing this dust and dirt around. And I was thinking to myself, man, this is just like the Dust Bowl. You know, pretty soon that's what our yard's going to look like.
Yeah, I know. You know, Holly and I have seen a lot of these things or talked about them and read forecasts on them, and now that we're in it here, we're pretty glad that we've written the two main books we have. Holly's written her book, The Dare to Prepare, and I've written The Cosmic Conspiracy. And the way we look at it is The Dare to Prepare is 632 pages of practical, down-to-earth preparation for about 60 or 70 different kinds of threats that can come your way. And then The Cosmic Conspiracy is the spiritual preparation book. They go hand in hand because you need both of them in these times. You prepare for the worst and pray for the best.
And if you're not ready spiritually, is what I tell everybody, then you might as well forget prepping because you're just going to lose.
Yeah, I know.
They have to get ready that way because otherwise I think what we're coming into is going to be, well, the Bible tells us you know, men's hearts are going to fail them for fear of what's coming. So, I, you know, of course, we can get into the whole UFO thing, too. Stan, I know you get that, but we're running out of time.
Well, that'll be the alien time, Aaron.
It will. I know. We're running out of time because that's a good one. I love talking about Nephilim and UFOs and fallen angels and all that good, weird stuff. I love it.
You know about this weather with the drought you asked about, the derechos, you know, these straight-line storms that have been hitting the New England, over the northeastern United States in the last few weeks. These things are becoming more common. And I did a chart on the images page called derechos. You'll see it right there, the first thing.
I saw it.
It's increased, the number of derechos we've had since 1973 has increased 500%. And a lot of that has been in the last 2003 to 2012. There's a graph there to show you exactly. And this kind of tells you what's happening.
It's pretty wild, especially like I told you in an email the other day that I'd never even heard of it until this month, and we've been through two. It's like, okay, we're in Indiana. We're like in the middle of nowhere, you know, and we get these things, and that just goes to show. We have a caller. Oh, we have a caller, Stan. Let's go ahead and take that real quick. We're running out of time. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Are they alive? Hey, welcome to the show.
Hi, Aaron. It's just me. I was just getting prepped for the next hour.
It's Laura.
Sorry about that.
Hey, well, Stan, you know Laura. There's Laura.
Oh, hi, Laura.
Stan.
How are you?
Well, I'm good. I was just getting prepped there for the next hour to come. Sorry about that, you guys.
That's okay.
Not a problem.
Well, Stan, are we going to see more and more of these, like you call, landicanes and these weird things I think are going to become more normal then?
Yeah, I think the landicanes, the nickname we coined here at the house, you know, years ago, but when we see the increase in the climate change, the hurricanes are going to go over land like they've done before, and they normally peter out, but I think we're going to see them endure, and they will just be great, huge destruction machines that endure much longer over land. And then, of course, with that, because those are circular patterns, the derechos, or stormicanes, if you want to call it that, they're a huge storm front that's along a fairly straight line, and they have winds that are 85 to 100 miles an hour. I mean, we've already seen it this year behind them, and huge lightning and hail. So these things are going to become more prevalent. The two of them, I think, we can expect to be the norm. And, of course, if you have drought and fire, then you have rain and flood, you're not winning. It's destroying crops and all kinds of stuff.
That's true. It is true. It destroys crops and houses and barns and, you know, everything else. I kept waiting to see my horses go flying, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's just crazy. But I think
you're
right.
Like that. Yeah, it's frightening when you're exposed like that. However, we know that if we trust the good Lord and talk to him about it and say, look, put your hand over my house, my property, my animals, my family, and if it be your will, shield us from these things. Otherwise, we'll see you shortly.
Amen to that. Amen to that, Stan. You are so right. And, Stan, I thank you so much for being on my show tonight.
Thank you, Aaron.
I really appreciate it. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I look forward to having you back on again, and I'm trying to twist Holly's arm to have her on, too. So.
Oh, good luck on that.
I know it. I'll keep working
on it. She's very shy about that.
She's so good, too.
I know. I keep telling her that, but, you know, I'm not winning.
Well, I send my blessings to both of you out there, and I thank you so much for being here. And you guys have a great night, and I'm so sorry about your loss today. I really am.
Thank you.
And I'll talk to you soon.
We'll talk to you later.
Okay. Bye, Stan. Well, guys, I want to thank you for being here tonight on Twisted Radio. We are done for another night. I will see you back next Thursday. Stay tuned to Highland Perspective with Laura Wilson, and we'll see what she has in store for us. And otherwise, let's keep prepping, and we'll talk to you soon. God bless you all. Good night.
For more information on audio and radio productions, contact Puka Shell Studios at 714-881-1906, 714-881-1906, or contact them at pukashellstudios@gmail.com, pukashellstudios@gmail.com. I'm Mark Christian. We'll see you next time on Twisted Radio. Thanks for listening.
There was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switch and bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth, and they pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor. While the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls the string and makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings. The night goes in on a rising tide. Look beyond the shadows. Behold a pale horse ride. They claim to seek a new world order, nations without borders, but don't believe the lie. Even in this wealthy nation, it could come down to starvation in the twinkling of an eye. They tell us there will soon be peace, our lives will be an endless feast, but they lead us toward the dark. In the distance, sabers rattle, and the armies train for battle as the beast prepares his mark. There's an unseen hand that pulls the string and makes his little puppets dance to any song he sings. As the night falls in on the rising tide, look beyond the shadows, behold a pale horse ride.
coming to you live from the Rocky Mountain High foothills of the Pikes Peak region. This is your host, Princess of Judah, Laura Ferris Wilson. Welcome to the July 26, 2012 edition of The Highland Perspective. What an excellent show tonight on Twisted Radio with Aaron. Stan Dale is just a great guest with a wealth of information. I hope everyone really enjoyed the show. I know I did. Well, here we are approaching the dog days of summer. Well, that's what they call it down in Oklahoma. That's what they call August. And all I can say is hot, hot, hot. Approaching, yes, I know. It feels like that it has been extremely hot for the last 2 or 3 months. And here in Colorado, we have had very, very dry and hot temperatures, terrible drought conditions. Crops have been destroyed here and throughout the country. Our preparedness group all pitched in and ordered a ton of anasazi beans. For those of you that are not familiar there with what I'm talking about, we have a local preparedness group here in Colorado Springs, and we have one of our members that likes to go over to the western slope of the Rocky Mountains here in Colorado and get beans for us. Hold on, I'm going to have you all bear with me just for 1 second here. I'm just about to cough. I'm really sorry. I didn't know that was going to happen, so bear with me just a second, please. All right, now let's get back to it. I'm sorry about that, folks, that little break. Anyway, our member goes over to Dove Creek, Colorado. And in Dove Creek, Colorado, there are some mills over there that carry a product called anasazi beans. Now, anasazi beans are about 20% higher in protein than a pinto bean. And the anasazi beans don't cause flatulence in folks that have digestive issues. So a lot of people do like anasazi beans much more than they like pinto beans. It's a lot easier on them. Anyway, anasazi beans are kind of expensive. Over at Whole Foods, which is the big corporate, you know, giant for supposed good nutritious food, the anasazi beans run about $6 a pound. Our group members have been able to throw in and pitch in on this bulk order and pay $1.50 a pound. For organic, they were paying $2 a pound. Not bad for this very good bean product. Now, the beans sprout very good. They're excellent for sprouting. They're excellent for planting. They're an heirloom bean that the Southwest Native American Indians have been growing and eating for thousands of years, I would suppose. And folks around here that started, and they taste really good. Folks around here that started having the anasazi beans, the first bean order we did was 3,000 pounds, and that was last March. Folks paid $1.10 a pound for the regular beans. This time, only 4 months later, the same beans were $1.50 a pound, and that ton cost $800 more than the previous ton in March. So anyway, one of our members drove out to Dove Creek, the same guy that went in March, went again this time, and he picked up the ton of beans and brought them back yesterday. Our members showed up to unload the ton of beans into the office, and it only took about 20 minutes. Some members showed up, and they wanted their beans right then. They showed up at 10 o'clock in the morning and had their receipts in their hands and got most of the beans out of here. And we only have a few 20-pound bags and some organic 25-pound bags left here in the office to be picked up. So I'm going to assume that those will be picked up by tomorrow. The mill at Dove Creek told our member that went out there that there would not be any beans for this year's harvest because the drought had wiped out the bean crop. I'm very glad that all of us got our beans. Now, I did want to go ahead and put an update up here, and this is an update, internet update, that came from Reuters, Thursday, July 26th, which is today, and it says, drought afflicts 80% of the U.S. Midwest, crops wilt. And this is how it goes. Drought covers 97% of the high plains, becomes more severe in the south, and rains are inadequate. The most extensive U.S. drought in five decades intensified this week across the Midwest and the Plain States that produce most of the country's corn, soybeans, and livestock, a report from the climate experts showed on Thursday. And the drought is worsening in the South, which was just recovering from last year's drought, the worst Texas had seen in a century. Almost 30% of the nine-state Midwest was suffering extreme drought, nearly triple from the previous week, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor for the week ending July 24th. Conditions in the Midwest, which produces roughly three-quarters of the corn and soybean crops in the world's largest producer and exporter, worsened despite the first measurable rainfall in a month in some areas. More than 53% of the United States and Puerto Rico are in moderate drought or worse, a record large amount for the fourth straight week in the Drought Monitor's 12-year history. The 2-plus inches of rain from southern Wisconsin to northern Indiana was able to only maintain status quo. Most other areas were not as lucky, said Drought Monitor author Richard Heim of the National Climate Data Center. Pastureland, rangeland, and crop conditions continued to deteriorate from the Colorado High Plains to the Ohio and mid-Mississippi valleys and from Oklahoma to the Dakotas, he said. More than half of the country's pastures have been rated poor or very poor by the U.S. Agricultural Department, while the corn and soybean crops have wilted under scorching temperatures during their more vulnerable periods of pollination. During their periods of pollination, that's really important for us to think about that. In the South, extreme and exceptional drought conditions increased in Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas, even as the overall area in the region affected decreased slightly. A Reuters poll this week estimated the U.S. corn yield at 130.8 bushels per acre, the lowest in 10 years. For a lot of the hardest hit areas, it's too late to reverse the damage on the corn. We had a lot of stress ahead of silking and into pollination, and that's the worst time we could have that stress, said Jefferies Bach Grains analyst McCain, and I don't know why this says Grains analyst Sean McCambridge. The parched conditions propelled corn and soybean futures to record peaks last week at the Chicago Board of Trade before scattered rains this week took prices off their highs. Surging animal feed prices. Now, I want everyone to pay attention to this because I'm going to hit on this here in just a minute. Surging animal feed prices, the biggest input cost for livestock producers, also led some farmers to cull their herds in the main cattle-producing regions of the plains. I'm going to break off here for just a second and tell you what I heard here locally. We do have a group here in Colorado Springs, and they're a meetup.com group. They are called the Colorado Springs Urban Homesteaders. And what these people do is they strongly encourage people to use their yards to grow gardens and grow their own food, have chickens in their yards, and in the city of Colorado Springs, it is legal to have chickens in your yard. So there's a lot of people that have chickens in their yard. They might have like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 chickens, and they're buying organic chicken feed, a lot of them, because they want to have high-quality eggs coming from their chickens. What I was told a couple of weeks ago is that the chicken feed, the organic chicken feed, had increased in price by 150% in a two-week period of time. That means, and the only thing I could think of when they were telling me this was that a $10 bag of chicken feed now costs $25. How much does that make a dozen eggs jump up to? We can go in the grocery stores right now and look around and see a dozen eggs costing, you know, anywhere, and this is organic eggs. I'm not talking about factory farmed eggs of sick chickens and dead chickens and all that. I'm talking about really good quality organic chicken eggs. We are seeing organic chicken eggs right now in some stores running $4 or $5 a dozen. What is it going to be when the organic chicken feed goes up that high? Are we talking about a dozen organic eggs costing $6, $7, or $8 a dozen? I mean, if I go over and buy chicken eggs from someone locally here that's got chickens in their yard, you know, which I would be more than glad to do instead of buying it at a big place like, you know, Safeway grocery store or one of the big chain grocery stores. The point is that, you know, yeah, I'm going to have to pay a lot more for these eggs over at someone's yard, some lady that's got some chickens there, because she's got to feed her chickens. So I want everyone to consider the fact that I'm just talking about eggs here. What about the feed that is feeding large herds of livestock, or the guy out here just trying to feed his cattle or whatever the case may be? I can see prices of animal protein, meats and whatnot, skyrocketing, absolutely skyrocketing this winter. So I want everyone to really pay attention to what I'm saying about this. Okay, back to this report on this weather. Light showers overnight and in the Midwest, southern southwestern Midwest, were too little too late to prevent further losses in the crops. While heat of 100 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 38 degrees Celsius, according to the article, or higher, was forecast to continue into next week. Andy Karst, meteorologist for World Weather Incorporated, said today, on Thursday. Wow, that's some pretty harsh stuff. We are living it. We are living it every day. We're seeing it every day. Other people are starting to see it every day. I think folks are starting to wake up across the country. I'm hearing things all the time. You know, I wish that they would wake up into repentance, because I think that right now our country is under judgment. And there are some people that agree with me on that. How many aborted babies can there be before there's judgment? I mean, how much sin, how much rampant sin, and just shaking, people shaking their fists in the face of Yahweh, how much does it take? When are people going to see what's going on? When are they going to repent? You know, the scriptures do tell us that as things get worse, people will shake their fists in the face of Yahweh and be mad and be angry because of the judgment. How stupid. But that's what they're doing. And some of them are waking up. Some people aren't shaking their fists in the face of Yahweh. Some people are coming around. I like to see that. Anyway, tonight we are going to cover some other current events, and we're going to talk a little bit about this current thing with this United Nations Disarmament Treaty, and we're going to kind of touch on some highlights and some other people's opinions, news articles, and some facts and whatnot on that. I know that a lot of people are already tired of hearing it, but I'm meeting people every day that I've never met before, and they're kind of panicked. I had a lady come in here to get beans that was from a different organization, and she came and got beans in here in the office today, and she kind of carefully asked me, you know, how do you feel about the Second Amendment? And I laid it out. I told her how I felt about the Second Amendment. She smiled real big and said, oh, I can see that I've come to the right place. And so I promoted the preparedness group to her. And I said, come on down to a group meeting. You know, you'll meet a lot of people that think like you do. So before we get into the current events and whatnot, first I want to issue a verbal disclaimer, a legal disclaimer, for any and all natural healing products that I share with you and encourage you to purchase for the well-being of yourself and others and for your preparedness stash. Okay, here's the disclaimer. None of my statements have been evaluated by the FDA and are in no way suggested as a cure for any ailment, hangnail, disease, mania, loss of mental clarity, or any other problem that a person or animal can be instantly cured from by using magical pharmaceutical drugs. Everything I speak of regarding natural healing and health is for entertainment purposes only. No, I am not a doctor, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. What if? What if viruses could be stopped from infecting a human or animal body by taking a capsule once per day? What if an outbreak of a reoccurring viral condition could be stopped by taking a capsule once per day? What if people refused to be jabbed with a toxic vaccine and instead took one capsule per day to protect themselves? Of course, I am not talking about a capsule of a magical pharmaceutical drug. No, I'm talking about something very natural. I take Humacil, a natural herbal blend, and I have not experienced infections from any viruses in a very long time. My dog takes a capsule per day of Vetramate in his food. Vetramate is made by the makers of Humacil. It is the animal formula. I have not vaccinated my dog against parvo in over 10 years. And I am not worried about my dog contracting parvo. I'm not worried about me contracting any type of influenza. I'm not worried about me contracting any form of a hemorrhagic fever, because that's a viral, it's instigated by a virus. So my family is just not worried about any kind of viral outbreaks. I've got a lot of these things in my preps because I don't trust some laboratory where they've been experimenting, trying to create bioweapons. I just don't trust something not to get loose. You guys remember the movie The Stand, you know, where the guy is working down at the lab where the bioweapons are being made, and all of a sudden there's some kind of an accident inside the lab, and the guy runs out of there. He jumps in his car. He's a guard. He races home to get his wife and his baby, and unfortunately he is carrying this horrible contagion, whatever it is. Well, I don't think it's going to be an accident. I think it might be something deliberate, because we all know who the powers of be are, and we know who they serve. So I keep Humacil and Vetramate in my preps. Humacil and Vetramate are available from Genesis 129, and I'm going to give you that email address to get a hold of them. Genesis, like a book in the Bible, .one, O-N-E, that's the word one, O-N-E, Genesis.one, and the number's 29 at yahoo.com. Once again, that's Genesis.one, the number's 29 at yahoo.com. Vetramate and Humacil, less than a dollar a day for total protection. Okay. Washington Times, Wednesday, July 25th. Now, I know you guys have heard a bunch of this already. I'm not sure what's going to happen tomorrow. Tomorrow is July 27th. This UN disarmament treaty has been being discussed in New York since July the 2nd. Of course, we had a horrible false flag event occur up in Aurora, Colorado. There is nothing in my mind that can make me believe that this was anything other than a government black op that went down up there in that theater. There was one man that was in the theater. It's on YouTube. It can be seen there. A gentleman was sitting there. He was getting ready to watch the movie, and he heard a cell phone ring and saw a fella down in front of him, closer to the screen and on the right side of the theater there, rise up and go over and open the exit door to the theater, like the emergency exit there on the right side. And lo and behold, the gunman comes in through that exit, throws a gas canister, gas is going everywhere, and then he opens fire on the people that are sitting there in the theater. I don't believe for a minute that this was just a lone nut, just like I don't believe that Timothy McVeigh was a lone nut, and I don't believe that Lee Harvey Oswald was a lone nut. And on and on and on with all of these things we're told about these lone nuts that pull off something. I do believe, however, that the gentleman was probably, he's messed up on some kind of drugs, folks. We can see that right there, the pictures of the courtroom with his attorney sitting there. This guy, he looks like he's in another world. He looks like he's on an acid trip or something. You know what I mean? He is really messed up. So is he on SSRI drugs? I'm gonna place a big bet down on that and say, yeah, probably so. All these people that have performed these acts, these children shooting in schools, all these things, women drowning their kids in bathtubs, women putting their children in a car and running them off in a lake, amazing. They've all been on SSRI drugs. Phil Hartman's wife shot him to death while he was laying in bed. And, of course, those who know who Phil Hartman was, he was the comedian on Saturday Night Live that was just laying in his bed asleep when his wife came in and, and shot him and killed him. And then she later turned the weapon on herself and laid down in bed and killed herself right next to him. She was on SSRI drugs. So I do believe that this guy is probably on SSRI drugs and either has been or he was on SSRI drugs and suddenly someone took him off those drugs. Whatever the case may be, I believe that SSRI drugs are it's a very strong possibility. And I would say with almost 100% likelihood that this guy was on SSRI drugs. So anyway, here we go now. We've got Barack Obama. Barack Obama calls for measures against gun violence. Washington Times, July 25th. Faced with a clamor in his party for stricter gun control in the wake of the Colorado movie theater massacre, President Obama said Wednesday night that he would, quote, leave no stone unturned, unquote, in seeking new measures to reduce violence nationwide, including more restrictive background checks on gun purchases. I kind of wonder, would any kind of a restrictive background check done any good for this guy that pulled this off? You know, there's been a lot of speculation online that here you got a guy without a job for several months, and yet he's in possession of extremely expensive weapons, extremely expensive body armor. Folks, my husband and I are working, and we can't afford that stuff. How does this guy afford it? I'm talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of stuff. How does this guy afford it? I can't afford it, and I don't even have a house payment. So, you know, that's one we all need to look at here. Quote, a lot of gun owners would agree that AK-47s belong in the hands of soldiers, not in the hands of criminals, unquote, Mr. Obama said at the National Urban League Convention in New Orleans. Okay, I need to rip that one apart for just a minute if I could. AK-47s belonging in the hands of what soldiers? Isn't that a Russian weapon? Why would Mr. Obama, granted, I realize he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer, folks. I know that, okay? But isn't the weapons that our soldiers use, things called M16s and M4s and weapons like that, why is Mr. Obama talking about AK-47s being in the hands of soldiers? What soldiers is he talking about? Is he talking about the thousands of Russians that are sitting down here right now being trained in Fort Carson? Is that what he's talking about? You know, that just really made me wonder when I read that. Okay, and he goes on and says, they belong on the battlefield of war, not on the streets of our cities. Those things, the battlefield of war could turn into the streets of our cities. Am I wrong there? Am I wrong? I mean, what's it going to take? Martial law? Okay. The president blamed politics and lobbying for defeating gun control measures when outcries arise after mass shootings in the USA. And he said the nation's attention should not just be focused on mass shootings, such as the one Friday in Aurora, Colorado, but on the daily shooting deaths of youths from gun violence in major cities. Well, Mr. Obama, Mr. I don't live in reality, Obama. I wonder if he's on SSRI drugs. Oh, did I say that? Anyway, in our cities, the youths of these cities that he's talking about, and all the gun violence in the major cities, the youths are not going in to a store, a retail establishment, filling out the paperwork and purchasing these weapons like other people do, like real law-abiding citizens do. No, 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 because number one, a youth can't go into a store and buy a weapon. So, Mr. Obama, where are the youths getting the weapons from? Oh, I know. They're getting them from Eric Holder, aren't they, Obama? Oh, did I say that? Okay, didn't mean to. Didn't mean to insinuate something like that, folks. I've got my legs crossed. Okay, good. Anyway, these youths are getting these guns, obviously, from criminals. and criminal cartels and things of that nature, gangs, mafia, whatever. They're sure as hell not going down and getting them from a retail establishment like a normal person. So once again, we have Mr. Nutcase out of touch, Barack Obama. Okay, here's another quote. Every day, the number of young people we lose to violence is about the same as the number of young people we lost in that movie theater. Unquote, Mr. Obama said. For every Columbine or Virginia Tech, there are dozens gunned down on the streets of Chicago or Atlanta or here in New Orleans. Violence plagues the biggest cities, but it also plagues the smallest towns. Hey, Barky, guess where else it plagues? It plagues the south border, bud. It's all down there in Arizona, isn't it? Oh, that's right, your buddy Eric Holder. He was involved in that deal, wasn't he? Okay, that's a big deal. That was a big money deal, huh? Okay, let's get past that. It was Mr. Obama's first comment on gun violence since the shooting in Aurora that killed 12 people and wounded 58. Progressives are pushing Mr. Obama, who campaigned 4 years ago on a platform of stricter gun control, to speak out on the subject and use the tragedy to impose stricter gun regulations. Really, you think? Who do you think was behind that whole thing? Just wondering what everybody thinks. But the White House has been saying since the shooting last week that Mr. Obama has no plans to seek new gun legislation. You know why? Because he's up for election, folks. That's why. Because he's not going to go after that one right now. He's got other fish to fry. He wants to be reelected. So anyway, let's see. I'm not gonna completely finish that article. You guys know where it's going. I know where it's going. I'm just really curious here as to what people think about some of these things. The average public. I mean, I've got people coming in here in my office telling me what they think. What do you guys think? Get on the chat room. Tell us what you think. If you want to call in, you can call in at 347-215-6580. Once again, that number is 347-215-6580. Okay, Michael Bloomberg. Here's one. Michael Bloomberg on stronger gun laws. And of course, he is the mayor of New York City. And since most of the country has to look at New York City to be some kind of model, which I really don't understand. I think that place is the armpit of the world, okay? Mayor Bloomberg says, I quote, "I don't understand why the police officers across this country don't stand up collectively and say, we're going to go on strike." Isn't going on strike like a union thing? Are the police officers all in some kind of a labor union or something? Not sure where he even get something like that. He's going to be on, supposedly supposed to be on Piers Morgan's show tonight. And he's involved. He's a co-founder of an organization called Mayors Against Illegal Guns. Well, now, aren't they trying to make all guns illegal? Isn't that what's going on? It sure sounds like it to me. Okay, here's another article. 25 reasons why we need to preserve our Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. This is posted by Truther on July the 24th, and it came from Steve Nolan in a publication called Survival Week. In the spirit of that quote, and that's the Bloomberg quote, let's look at 25 examples from just this year of why we need to preserve our Second Amendment. And I'm going to touch on some of these. Reason number one, gun-carrying attorney shoots and kills assailant. An article published by MSNBC told the tale of a nervous armed gunman attempting to rob some citizens in Columbia, South Carolina, who confronted attorney Jim Corley, demanding he give up his wallet. Corley agreed to comply and reached around his back pocket and pulled a small 32 caliber pistol hidden in a wallet holster loaded with 6 hollow point rounds. Unfortunately, Kason Helms, 18 years old, of Edison, New Jersey, Corley gave him more than he bargained for. The attorney fired once into the robber's stomach. The young would-be robber turned and ran. Corley fired twice more, hitting him in the neck and the torso. Bleeding profusely, Helms ran into the night and later collapsed and died on a railroad embankment 100 feet away. Reason number two, female Marine kills attacker in self-defense. Marine Corporal Raina Ross bought a gun in a non-waiting period state. That's cool. And used it to kill an attacker in self-defense 2 days later. Had a five-day waiting period been in effect, Miss Ross would have been defenseless against the man who had been stalking her. Reason number three, a pastor shot and wounded a man who broke into his Detroit church. Lawrence Adams went to Westside Baptist Church on Sunday evening and found the intruder inside the building, said Detroit Police Sergeant Aaron Stevens. The man began swinging an object at the retired police lieutenant who pulled out a handgun and shot him in the abdomen, he said. Reason number four, Minneapolis good neighbor apprehends robbery suspect. Seeing an armed criminal rob a woman of her purse at gunpoint and pistol whip her, a Minneapolis CCW holder pursued, and that would be concealed carry permit. Holder pursued the robber in an attempt to capture him, which resulted in a confrontation in which the citizen had to shoot the robber, who later died of his wounds. Reason number five, North Dakota senior citizen stops burglary with a gun. Hearing a loud noise and seeing an intruder in the house at 4 a.m., a woman alerted her sleeping husband, who armed himself with a pistol and went to investigate. The 82-year-old husband found the 26-year-old burglar in the home and held him at gunpoint until police arrived. Both the burglar and would-be victims were unarmed, and the criminal faces felony charges. Okay, I don't understand that. Both the burglar and would-be victims were unharmed. I'm sorry, folks. Unharmed, and the criminal faces felony charges. Reason number six, Temple University student fights off armed robbers. A 21-year-old Temple student and friend were accosted by a 15-year-old armed robber and two accomplices about 2 a.m. near the university. When the armed assailant fired on the student in the course of the robbery, the student drew his legally carried pistol and returned fire. The student sustained gunshot wounds to the stomach, and the robber was shot in the chest and the leg. Philadelphia police will place felony charges against the 15-year-old assailant upon his release from the hospital. Reason number seven, Ohio woman shoots ex-boyfriend that restraining order failed to stop. An Ohio woman who feared that her ex-boyfriend and father of their two children was not going to be deterred by the restraining order required him to stay away, armed herself with a pistol, and was glad she did. When the ex-boyfriend broke into her home and assaulted her with a crowbar, okay, imagine that one now, getting assaulted with a crowbar. Fearing for her life, she shot and killed the intruder. Under Ohio's newly adopted Castle Doctrine, there is a presumption of self-defense in circumstances such as these. Reason number eight, armed Naples, Florida clerk foils robbery and kidnapped attempt. A 22-year-old clerk was changing shifts at a family-owned convenience store when an armed man entered and demanded money. He also grabbed a stroller holding one of the clerk's two babies and tried to flee with the year-old child. That cost him his life as the clerk pulled out a gun kept behind the counter for protection and shot the would-be robber and kidnapper, wounding him and causing him to flee the store empty-handed. Tackled outside the store by an arriving employee who saw what had happened, the robber was held for police and later died of his injuries. Reason number nine, released inmate shot dead during Redding, California home invasion. 37-year-old Jesse Theus was released early Thursday morning from the Shasta County Jail, and before sunup Friday, he invaded a Redding, California home. The 66-year-old female homeowner fired warning shots when she heard someone trying to force entry into her home. When the invader tried a short time later to climb into her window, she shot him dead. Theus had been released due to a county prison policy designed to ease overcrowding by requiring the daily release of those inmates prison officials deemed low risk. So he was deemed low risk, was he? Reason number 10, Beaumont, Texas homeowner fights off two young home invaders. Two Texas youths picked the wrong house to try to invade. Both armed, the two forced their way into a Beaumont home about 2 a.m. on a Sunday morning and demanded money of the owner. While tussling with the armed intruders, the homeowner was able to get his own gun and fatally shot one of his attackers and drove off the second one. The dead robber was found in an adjacent field by responding police. No charges have been filed against the homeowner, who was acting in self-defense. Reason number 11, armed Houston dad foils attack on 14-year-old daughter. Hearing a commotion shortly after his daughter had left for school early one morning, Richard Goody left his house to see two men, one of them armed, accosting his daughter. Goody's warning shot failed to frighten off the assailants, one of whom put the daughter in a chokehold and a pistol to her head while threatening to kill the girl if her father did not back off. While the assailant was dragging the daughter away, some space opened up between the daughter and the bad guy, allowing the father to shoot the suspect in the stomach, ending the encounter and putting the second suspect to flight. No charges are expected against the father, who says he did what he had to do to save his daughter. Reason 12, North Carolina woman defends family member. A North Carolina family was returning to their vehicle at 1 a.m. after some Black Friday shopping at a Myrtle Beach, South Carolina Walmart when they were set upon by armed robbers. One of the robbers shot a woman in the foot, even though she had surrendered her purse upon his demand. The woman's son attempted to protect his mother and was shot at and pistol whipped for his efforts. The woman's sister, hearing the shots fired as she entered her vehicle, picked up her own loaded pistol from the vehicle's console and confronted the robbers. Not wanting to shoot directly at the robbers for fear of hitting her family or bystanders, she fired two shots over the heads of each robber, scaring them off. Her family credits the legally armed woman with saving the lives of her sister and nephew. Those are some examples. That was 12 out of 25 that I've got listed here that I'm sharing with you all. Now, this morning, I got up and I turned on my TV. I do have a Rick satellite. I turned on the TV, and lo and behold, there I'm watching on Russia Today. They're talking about the extremely liberal gun laws here in the United States and how those gun laws need to be changed. Obviously, they're talking about the Aurora, Colorado situation that we were talking about earlier. And man, they just were beating the drum and beating the drum over and over. I watched this go on for about an hour. One of the people that Russia Today was actually interviewing on their news broadcast was a guy that was in the Virginia Tech shooting years ago. And he was wounded. I think he received three gunshots. He had the a surgery. He got over the deal. And now this little weasel, this little punk, is sniveling around working as a high-paid lobbyist up there in the Brady office up there in Washington, D.C., making big bucks up there sniveling and crying and carrying on about disarming America, going and lobbying to our representatives and the senators and all this other stuff, beating the drum to shred our Constitution. What a jerk. I'm not going to say anything more because if I did, people would get mad at me, so I better just stop talking about that guy right there. But here's some more headlines. I'm not going to go into every single one of the details. Number 13, Ohio woman fights off sex offender. Number 14, a Wisconsin crime stopped by legally armed citizen. Number 15, a Tennessee man stops burglar. Number 16, a South Carolinian kills armed restaurant robber. Reason number 17, a pregnant California mom fights off two intruders. I have to read that one. It's short. Seeing two strange men entering her home in Fortuna, a young pregnant woman pointed a pistol at them and ordered them out. When they refused to leave, she fired on the men, missing them but scared them off. Needless to say, she is thankful she had a gun. Reason number 18, an Oklahoma man foils daylight home invasion. Reason number 19, a Pennsylvania cyclist ends teen robbery spree. Okay, I've got to do this one. Several teenage robbers accosted a Reading, Pennsylvania senior citizen while he enjoyed a morning bike ride in a public park. Two of the youths knocked him from his bike and demanded money while beating him. The 65-year-old biker pulled his legally carried pistol and shot two robbers, killing one. Police have determined that this was the third party, the third robbery the teens committed that morning. That morning, while they were skipping school. The local district attorney ruled the shootings justified and that the cyclist had no choice but to shoot in self-defense. A 65-year-old guy, good for him. Texas mother defends home and child. Reason number 21, an armed Colorado physician rescues 50 bystanders from hostage situation. Okay, I'm Colorado and I'm going to read it. When an armed Colorado Springs man entered his facility and took two female employees hostage, a doctor with a carry permit took up his pistol from its storage place in the office and covered an exit while 50 people escaped from the building and the potentially deadly situation. Police arrived a short time later and entered into the negotiations with the gunman, attempting a peaceful resolution. Unfortunately, it was not to be. As the police later shot and killed the gunman after negotiations ended in a confrontation. The two hostages were unarmed. The 50 people able to escape the building were thankful that the physician was armed as well as willing and able to use the weapon in their defense. Reason number 21, an early morning North Carolina home invader shot and killed by an armed woman. Reason number, do they have 21 on their twice? They might. And an alert armed Texas neighbor ends a burglary. Reason number 22, a Michigan CCW holder stops knife assault. Reason number 23, a South Carolina convenience store owner stops armed robber. Reason number 24, a 15-year-old Georgia boy stops home invasion and kills the burglar. Reason number 25, a California senior citizen shoots and stops home invaders. Law-abiding citizens should not have to justify our God-given and constitutionally protected rights, not only to protect ourselves and our loved ones and innocent bystanders or anybody else from violent crime. Our rights to bear arms still are our rights, despite the existence of those who abuse them. They still are our rights. Here's one more that is an ABC News. Salt Lake City, a citizen with a gun stopped a knife-wielding man as he began stabbing people Thursday evening in the downtown Salt Lake City's Smith's store. Smith's is a grocery store chain. Police say the suspect purchased a knife inside the store and then turned it into a weapon. Smith's employee, Dorothy Espinosa, says, quote, he pulled it out and stood outside the Smith's in the foyer and just started stabbing people and yelling, "You killed my people, you killed my people," unquote. Espinosa says the knife-wielding man seriously injured two people. Quote, there is blood all over. One got stabbed in the stomach and one got stabbed in the head and held his hands and got stabbed all over his arms. Unquote. Then before the suspect could find another victim, a citizen with a gun stopped the madness. A guy pulled a gun on him. This is the quotation. A guy pulled a gun on him and told him to drop his weapon or he would shoot him. So he dropped his weapon and the people from Smith's grabbed him. So the people from the grocery store took this guy down. By the time officers arrived, the suspect had been subdued by employees and shoppers. Police had high praise for the gun-carrying man who ended the hysteria. Lieutenant Brian Purvis said, quote, this was a volatile situation that could have gotten worse. We can only assume from what we saw it could have gotten worse. He was definitely in the right place at the right time, unquote. Dozens of other shoppers who could have become victims are also thankful for the gun-carrying man. And many, like Danielle Julian, are still in shock from the experience. Quote, scary, actually, really scary. 5 minutes before I walk out to my car, it could have been me, unquote. Police say right now they have no idea what caused the suspect to go on the dangerous rampage. So far, police have not released the names of the suspect, the victims, or the man who pulled the gun. Well, we have just a very short time left in the broadcast. We don't hear, the international media doesn't talk about these kinds of things. Oh, they talk about the crazy people that, you know, or people on SSRI drugs that nut out. Perhaps they are brainwashed, or maybe they're a Monarch or an MKUltra. We don't know what they are, but they go into places, they blow everything up with their weapons or their devices or whatever, shooting people. And everybody wants America disarmed because of it, but you never hear. They just don't talk about the people that were just minding their own business. Maybe they've got a concealed carry. Maybe it's open carry. There's people around here in Colorado Springs that open carry all the time. I'll tell you what, I hope like hell one of them are around if somebody goes to nutting out and starts shooting where I'm at. Or if I'm walking into a store or in and out from my car and someone decides to grab me and try to assault me, I certainly hope that somebody pulls out a weapon and stops that maniac. Maybe I'll pull out a weapon and stop the maniac. I hope. Maybe I'll stop them from hurting somebody else. We need to look at it like that. Okay, in the last few minutes, what we have here is NASA warns 97% of Greenland, the continent of Greenland. I'm going to call it a continent. It's a huge island up there in the North Atlantic area, Atlantic Ocean. NASA warns 97% of Greenland ice sheet surface melted in 4 days. In 4 days. The Greenland ice sheet melted at a faster rate this month than any other time in recorded history, with virtually the entire ice sheet showing signs of thaw. The rapid melting over just 4 days was captured by 3 satellites. It has stunned and alarmed scientists and deepened fears about the pace and future consequences of climate change. In a statement posted on NASA's website on Tuesday, scientists admitted the satellite data was so striking they thought at first that it had to be a mistake. Quote, "This is so extraordinary that at first I questioned the result. Was this real or was it due to a data error?" Unquote. And this guy's name is Sun Nguyen. I guess he's an Asian fella from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena. And he said that in a release. He consulted with several colleagues who confirmed his findings. Dorothy Hall. Yes, Soldier Man. He wants to play the Charlie Daniels song again. Yeah, let me get done with this article and then you can play that song again. Anyway, this fellow consulted with several colleagues who confirmed his findings. Dorothy Hall, who studies the surface temperature on Greenland at NASA Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, confirmed that the area experienced unusually high temperatures in mid-July and that there was a widespread melting over the surface of the ice sheet. Okay, how about a comment on this? Do you suppose if that ice sheet melted, wouldn't that add a lot more water to the ocean? I would think so. Okay, looks like we're going to have a Charlie Daniels song here. It's going to close us out, folks. Brad wants to play the song. Thank you very much for listening tonight. I hope I was able to spur your thought processes on and whatnot. That's what we want to do. We'll see you next Thursday night at the same time. Have a great week, and Yahweh bless. Good night.
Nation, blessed above all of creation, it was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free, it was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth, and they pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor. While the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls the string. It makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings as the night goes in on a rising tide. Look beyond the shadows. Behold a pale horse ride. They claim to seek a new world order, nations without borders, but don't believe the lie. Even in this wealthy nation, it could come down to starvation in the twinkling of an eye. They tell us there will soon be peace, our lives will be an endless feast, but they lead us toward the dark. In the distance, sabers rattle, and the army's trained for battle as the beast prepares his mark. There's an unseen hand that pulls the string and makes his little puppets dance to any song he sings as the night rolls in on the rising tide. Look beyond the shadows, behold a pale horse ride.
Thunder and hoofbeats of a pale horse run.